A plasmid is a circle of DNA with lots of parts. Bacteria make them, but scientists can't break them apart. So now I'm so glad that we can design them a la carte. So they should be shared, be shared, be shared. Plasmids turn genetics into art.
All right, so hey, Eddie, how's it going? Today we're sitting down with Tom McFadden, who is a YouTuber. I don't know if you've heard of him before.
I'm a huge fan of Science with Tom.
Ah, great, yeah. So he has a YouTube channel called Science with Tom where he makes science music videos and actually helped us make a plasmid rap recently. So I've used the plasmid rap to help explain what plasmids are to my friends, but have you found the plasmid rap video useful?
I have. Luckily, at this point, I know what a plasmid is, but around 2.5 years ago when I started at Gene, it would have been nice to have that video around to explain it.
Yeah, and I mean, that's definitely Tom's goal now, too. So he'll be reaching out to more and more scientists to try to help them explain their research. So to get a better idea of how he came to this point and what he's going to be doing in the future, let's listen in. Today, we're sitting down with 8th grade science teacher and science music video producer, actor, and rapper, Tom McFadden. While teaching undergrads at Stanford, Tom began making science music videos to keep his students upbeat and engaged during arduous problem sets. After a brief period in New Zealand where he got his master's in science communication and spent additional time making and popularizing more videos, Tom got the opportunity to bring his videos into the classroom in the US with his Science Rap Academy class. Now, Tom is devoting even more time to his science communication efforts through ScienceWithTom.com and ScienceWithTom LLC, his for-profit science video company that you can use to get your research out there in an approachable form. Listen to the full interview to hear more about Tom, his videos, and how he can help you communicate your science. All right, so you just made a plasmid wrap with a little bit of help from us. It would be nice if we could introduce you to our listeners and if you could kind of tell us how you got started making science videos and what you do with Science with Tom.
Absolutely. So yeah, my name's Tom McFadden. I'm half-time 8th grade science teacher out here in the Bay Area of California, and half-time trying to turn Science with Tom LLC into a real entity. And the task there is really to take what I love about science education and expand it beyond my personal classroom. And a lot of that involves music videos and getting kids to create, and a lot of that involves talking to scientists and trying to kind of operate at the intersection of scientists and K-12 classrooms.
Cool. And how did you get started with all of this? Like, what made you start thinking about doing science videos in the first place?
So right after I graduated from Stanford, I had studied human biology, and that program's an interdisciplinary program that hires recent graduates to be like full-time course associates. So I kind of fell into this amazing full-time teaching job at Stanford.
Sorry, keep going.
Sure. Yeah. So I had all these interests in video and music and performance and was just a huge biology nerd. And so it actually seemed like the most obvious thing in the world to me to combine all of those interests for my students. So it's like these intro bio classes with 300 kids and on the problem sets that we would give out every week. I would start making these raps, these very low budget, low quality science raps, just to kind of like keep the kids motivated during these arduous problem sets. And then I got enough positive feedback early on that I kind of grew in production values and collaboration until I was making like semi-legit music videos.
Yeah, and there are those early music videos still around?
Yes, they're deep on the internet somewhere, I'm sure. I think the earliest one that you could probably still track down was High Meiosis, which was really about Gregor Mendel. But there's that Eminem song, "Hi, my name is what?"
Yeah.
So my version was, "Hi, meiosis one, meiosis two, meiosis chicken makes gametes."
Nice.
Yeah.
And did your students say that actually helped them study, like it helped them remember stuff or what?
Yeah, there was a lot of positive feedback from students. I've always been skeptical about the like help you study, help you remember stuff
sure.
part of it. But engagement, like a little bit of like it was a hard class that these students were taking. So to have just something that would kind of ease the tension and pain of like how much they were needing to study was one thing. Mm-hmm. And one thing I always enjoyed is that the students would say like, yo, like going back to Cali, the song by Biggie came on at this party I was at last night. And like, all I could think about was the plasma membrane. And so that I think was more of my goal, was just to bottle up the enthusiasm and excitement that I had for the material, mm-hmm. inside of this like form that would percolate in their brains even when they weren't studying.
Yeah, so it kind of makes everything more approachable. It makes them actually think about it outside of whenever they would be in class, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Cool. And so from Stanford, you ended up going and doing similar things, teaching eighth grade students. How did you make that jump, and why did you make that jump?
Yeah, the key middle ground is I spent 2 years in New Zealand on a Fulbright getting a master's of science communication. And that was a really crazy experience because I got to New Zealand and they're like, oh, he's a famous science rapper from America. And it was so they, yeah, they put me on tour. I was going around these elementary schools, middle schools for science outreach festivals and stuff, using my Stanford like hardcore cellular respiration songs. And like the kids kind of enjoyed it. They had no clue what I was talking about. And so I had this really quickly needed to come up with some songs for a younger audience. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the research that I had been doing about science communication led me down the road to middle school as kind of the ideal age group, mm-hmm. not only because that's when a lot of students lose interest in science, but also in terms of like what middle schoolers are learning about, mm-hmm. is kind of the right level of general knowledge for the general public. And so I figured if I aimed for middle school, I would hopefully be creating content that would be really useful for general populace as well.
Sure. So it's getting middle school, you feel like, is exactly that level that people are already at. So you can actually talk to people through the rap videos and potentially get them more interested later.
That's definitely the goal. And so when I got back from New Zealand to the United States, one of the big takeaways, I guess I had two huge takeaways. One was the importance of narrative.
Yeah.
Like bringing storytelling into science communication. And two, the importance of like authenticity in using music in science. And so the way I got at those two things at once was having eighth graders from the Bay Area, from Oakland, San Jose, make their own science history battle raps, mm-hmm. with like a lot of help and support from me.
Yeah.
So for example, these students in Oakland researched the story of Rosalind Franklin and Watson and Crick, and then put together this narrative, and like the conflict is already there, right?
Right,
like,
yeah.
Storytelling, the narrative, when you bring in history, is really easy. And so we had that going, and then the kids were the stars. So, like, you know, the idea was to take this small group of kids, give them a really powerful experience, but then make the production values so high, mm-hmm. that there would be a big audience for what they created.
Yeah. The Rosalind Franklin, Watson and Crick one is probably my favorite one that I've seen of yours, because it is a super interesting story and not many people know about it. So definitely think that is like a perfect example of the storytelling from you guys. So when you're making the videos like high quality, I guess what goes into making it high quality, and did you have a background in making videos beforehand, and what do you actually do? Like, what's your process when you're making a video?
Yeah, I had a background in high school of making low quality high school videos for like anytime a teacher would give me that option, I would always do that. And that was like such a fun creative outlet for me.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I since this has always been a side gig, I've always sought out video people with more video talent than me. Mm-hmm. Like I can put together a video fine, but I've always tried to collaborate with somebody who really knows what they're doing with the gear and the editing. And usually people are so excited about these projects that I can recruit a team like that. So that's one element, is like finding talented professionals. And then finding funding for that is a big thing.
Yeah.
And that was kind of where I was at in 2013, was like, okay, let's make these really, really high quality, which takes time and money. Just to plant a seed, is that since that era since becoming a middle school science teacher, I've become much more interested in what it looks like for students to do every step of the process, mm-hmm. And have it still reach a minimum threshold of production value.
Yeah.
And so now when I teach my groups of middle schoolers and I walk them through it, they do all the editing and shooting, and I'll bring in coaching, but that takes less money and more time to coach students through that process.
Yeah. And so when you started doing it with eighth graders, was the school that you were originally doing it in, were they very gung-ho about it, or did it take some convincing to get people to realize that this is something that's worthwhile?
It's actually funny. I was, while I was doing these science history battle raps, and I just like kind of basically cold calling teachers and schools and be like, can I come do this project? Mm-hmm. I'd put myself out there, and a teacher from this private school called the Nueva School reached out to me and said, hey, we already use your Stanford videos to teach our eighth grade class. The students are obsessed with them. Will you come talk to them? And it was kind of like once I stepped foot in the building, this teacher kept upselling me and like, will you do a project with them? And then at a certain point, she was like, I'm out of here. Will you take my eighth grade science teaching job? Uh-huh. And so, in fact, before I was a science teacher there, I was already doing the Science Rap Academy with them. And so, if anything, I was there as their science rap teacher first. So when you say gung-ho, yes, 100%. and the school's been really supportive of terms of support, just financing that class.
Sure. And so, and have you had luck with, you said you were kind of pitching it to other schools too. Have other people picked it up since then, now that they kind of see what you've been able to do?
Yeah, absolutely. There's been a lot of different schools and organizations who want that experience for their students. But that exact experience is like a 3 to 6 month class of multiple meetings, and it's actually just like way too much of a time and money investment. Mm-hmm. And so I've spent a lot of the last couple of years figuring out, okay, how do I create an experience that's way, 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 way more scaffolded, mm-hmm. that doesn't require tons of expertise on anyone's part. And the best example of that is this verse 2 idea, where I basically make a science music video tailored to the standards, but leave the second verse blank. So now the beat's there, the topic is there, the video's there, and all a student has to do is write the lyrics, perform them over the instrumental part of the video, and all of a sudden they had like a little taste of this process.
Right. And so all of this is now hosted on Science with Tom LLC, like you said before, right?
Yep. It's on YouTube, the Science with Tom YouTube channel. I've got a website. And just in this like hardcore experimentation phase of figuring out to the degree to which I know what I do is successful when it's my class, how do I bottle it up and take that creative experience to a larger group of students?
Mm-hmm. And I guess kind of what's your business model for making it all work? Are you planning on making money off of these things, or what's your plan going forward?
That is a great question. I definitely did not get into this game for the money.
Yeah.
And my brain does not work in a business way. Like, I'm just like, do fun creative project here and then there and then there. But because of all the people I've met and talked to and the kind of my ambitions for reaching a larger group of people, I basically have been forced to figure out how to make it financially sustainable, mm-hmm. Rather than it always being the side gig that relies on, kind of luck and goodwill. And so it was a pretty agonizing decision to go for-profit versus nonprofit, and was basically convinced by the idea that, like, either way, the goal is not making money. It's just a matter of where is the money coming from? Is it coming from grants that I go out and get, or is it coming from, like, the value that I create with the tools and the experiences? And it was also just simpler to incorporate as an LLC. So that's the current mode. And the model, there's a lot of experimentation there as well. I'm as dedicated as I am to K-12 education, I'm equally interested in kind of scientists and labs and nonprofits such as yourself as a user, as a customer.
Sure.
And my real dream is to be able to kind of triangulate between scientists, labs, teachers, and students, and basically in creating something of value to scientists, it ends up serving the K through 12 market with teachers not having to pay for it. Mm-hmm. That's really my dream, is to have the scientists as my customer, and then to make videos and resources freely available for students.
Mm-hmm. And so basically you would get the expertise from the people who are like potentially PhD level, that kind of thing, and have whatever they make with you available, or is that the kind of direction? Okay.
Yeah. And this comes back to the narrative thing that I think, and adding on a relevance component, but like, I think it's really powerful for students to see scientists, especially scientists who might look like them or they can relate to. There's kind of an automatic narrative component there as soon as you introduce the scientists.
Mm-hmm.
But
then on the scientists end, I guess what's their incentive for doing it?
Great question. Just came from the science public understanding of science conference, where we talked a lot about this. And there was an assumption within the people who showed up at this conference that, like, it is important for scientists to do outreach. Mm-hmm. This is institutionalized with the broader impact part of their NSF grants. There's a lot of scientists who are really good at it. There's a lot of scientists who don't care at all about it. But clearly, for us to have like a functioning society and to maintain a healthy science support for science within the world, and within the country, outreach is critical. So some scientists recognize the inherent value of that. Some scientists feel like they have to do it for their broader impact on their grants. But either way, I'm exploring whether there is enough demand from those labs for a third party such as myself to help them do their outreach and make it reach a big audience.
And have you talked to people who cross that spectrum, like people who don't really care except for the fact that it's in their grant, all the way to scientists who definitely really do care? I'm sure those are the easiest ones to talk to because they're probably
I'm still at the early adopter phase, which is the people who are hardcore and believe in the power of it. I'm early enough that I haven't like convinced the skeptical person who doesn't care about outreach. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge question mark for this model.
Sure. Though I'm sure getting the early adopters is the best way to go, because then you get more popular among that community and people say, oh, we can use you for our outreach component of our grants, that kind of thing.
Totally.
Yeah. Kind of like the Tesla model, I guess, getting the people who really want it first.
I think it's a classic entrepreneurship model.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and so then my other question for you is, so I guess within the company now, a lot of the ideas for the topics of the reps are mostly going to be coming from the scientists that you're hoping will reach out to you, or that you'll reach out to and then tell them that they can do this. Do the kids that end up being in the videos, do they have any input into what kind of stories get told, what the production process is like, or are they just kind of there to learn from you and not have so much improvisation during the process?
Yeah, that's a great question. At the moment, I'm doing a lot in parallel. So in addition to seeking out these projects for scientists, I'm also still teaching my Science Rap Academy class as a teacher at my school.
Mm-hmm.
And so for that class, the answer to your question is yes. The students basically run the entire show. They're choosing the topic. They're choosing the narrative. They're fully invested. They're learning how to do shooting, editing, the entire package. And I'm thinking a lot and working a lot to try to figure out how to package that experience for others. In terms of the making videos for scientists or companies, at the moment, I would say that it's easier for me to imagine having less student involvement on the creative end, just because it's really easy for me at this stage in my life to like write a song in an hour and make it accurate.
It's a very impressive skill, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. It's a lot of practice. And I kind of have this like all-star cast of students. So if there needs to be students in the video, then I can kind of call up the crew and say, hey, do you want to be involved in this opportunity? I'll give you a gift certificate for whatever to kind of make sure that they're compensated for their involvement. So that's the model of that. I still am musically inclined, so there's an element of where I can be the rapper as well. I've got a lot of friends who are musical, so I kind of look at the student involvement in these big projects as diminished. But if there's students who want to be involved in them, or for example, I just did a project with California Academy of Sciences, where they had a group of existing students. So pretty much what I was offering to Cal Academy was, I'll come and make a music video with you, but I will coach your students through it, and they will be the stars of it. Mm. So if a company or a scientist or whatever has their chosen group of students, then I'm open to working with them.
Cool. So it's kind of like they contract you out more or less to work with their group.
Yeah.
So I guess with all the stuff that you have going on now, what's the popularity level that you're at in terms of like your most popular videos? How many views do they get, and how big are you? How big do you want to get? I suppose
that's such a good question. Fossil Rock Anthem is my most popular video. It has like 700,000 views or something.
And what's it about?
It's about how the evidence of geology can tell us about the history of life on Earth, and how the history of life can tell us about the history of the Earth itself. It's kind of that, which is like a classic middle school science standard.
Sure.
Is what is the relationship between rocks and life, mm-hmm. and history? And as an animated music video to the tune of Party Rock Anthem, Fossil Rock Anthem.
You did.
Fossil rocks are in the ground tonight. They've been down there for a really long time.
Yeah.
They contain the history of life.
Woo.
They've been down there for a really long time.
Clap.
Fossil rocks.
It was actually my thesis for my New Zealand days.
Ah.
And so I think that one's really popular just because it's simple. It's something that a lot of teachers end up teaching at a lot of different levels. It's catchy. It's well produced. And I've kind of like strayed away from the desire to like really neatly package scientific content. And I've really been exploring this way harder task of emphasizing scientific process.
Okay.
And emphasizing the narrative and talking about, okay, what are the practices of science? And this taps into the next generation science standards,
mm-hmm.
Where there's a real departure from memorization and memorizing content towards understanding what scientists do.
Can you give me a quick overview of what the next generation science standards are?
Absolutely. So these are a lot of people sometimes refer to them as like, oh, they're like the Common Core. And they're not exactly. One similarity is that these are nationally created things that states can choose to create their own version of. So California, for example, is participating, a few other states, but only, you know, I think between 11 and 15 or so. So it's not the entire country yet. Although I think most states are moving in the same direction in science education, and that direction is, instead of saying students will know blank,
mm-hmm.
The idea is that students will be able to do this cool scientific practice, ask questions, come up with experiments, communicate their science in the context of this piece of content, and tying into this larger concept that runs throughout all K through 12 and runs throughout every domain of science, things like patterns and systems. So it's a really, for me as a teacher and someone who's interested in pedagogy, to me, this is a no-brainer of where science education needs to go, and that students should always be thinking about doing science and the habits of mind of scientists and the practice of science while they get their content. It's not to say the content doesn't matter anymore. It's just to put it on an equal playing field with the process.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's really awesome. That's essentially what, as you grow as a grad student, what you come to think, or what I at least came to think of as getting your PhD, is more learning how to do science and how to develop a project and that kind of thing.
Totally.
So in order to get it into kids' mindset much younger, I think is an awesome idea.
Exactly. There's this kind of unfortunate moment, I think, for a lot of undergrads or grad students where you're like being taught, like, this is what we understand about the world. And then all of a sudden in grad school, you kind of realize, like, what? Those were all lies? Like, those were all vast oversimplifications and models that have exceptions. And, like, it's all much more complicated than I was led to believe.
Yeah.
So I think if we can not have that be such a stark contrast during K through 12 and undergrad, that's an important step.
Yeah. And it'll also help people understand how science works in their daily lives so they can make more informed decisions later. So
exactly. Awesome, the habits of mind of a scientist very much translate to other domains of one's life.
Exactly. So back to my question, that was a little bit more about growth. I guess, do you have do you have particular goals for your videos? Like, do you want to have a certain number of videos with a certain number of views?
I sidestepped that growth question earlier. I'm conflicted about it. I think that the more students and teachers who can gain value from these videos, the better.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, the more students and teachers who can be creating cool stuff, or the more scientists who can feel empowered to communicate well, that's a bigger goal for me. So mm-hmm. I think that's where the learning actually happens, is in the creation of it.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel like there's a little bit of there's some hazards and some costs to growing too big as an institution.
Sure.
So I'm very small right now. It's really just me and a couple like partners who do video stuff or advisory board members who do other stuff or give me advice. And I'm pretty cautious about scaling up really quickly to make a full curriculum and the full stuff. I'm much more interested in the kind of rapid prototyping, learning, testing assumptions, and building out my own model for what I think is successful.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe thinking about scaling that up to benefit the largest group of people.
Sure. So you're more in the stage of kind of trying to figure out what's working right now, see whether teachers actually like the different things that you're putting out there. You have kind of a lot of different experimental type things on your website right now. Like you said, there was, I don't remember the thing where you're basically the kids are putting in the verses to the song. You have everything else ready
to go.
Verse 2.
Verse 2. Yeah.
You also have the karaoke stuff that's on there. And I guess I also, the fill in the plank was another one, right?
Yeah. What'd you think? Go fill in the plank. Did you do one?
I did one. I got a few of them. A few of them I didn't get. As I was going through them, I was hoping more of the blanks would be science words, and I got a little bit thrown off. But
no, that's very experimental right now. Yeah. And like, yeah, the I have not figured out whether I'm gonna double down on fill in the plank for those who have not seen it or participated. It's basically like a rhyming quiz where there's rhyming couplets about a topic with like a kind of easy to rhyme ending. And you have to guess what the second rhyming word is based on the context. And sometimes it's a science word or sometimes it's not a science word. But yeah, for some students, it appears to be really, really exciting. Like for some brains that can move that quickly in the rhyming context and pick up the context,
mm-hmm.
Or have been recently studying those terms, it's like the most fun thing ever. And then for a lot of people, it's like intimidating and hard and scary. And
sure. Yeah. puts them right on the spot, right?
Yeah.
It actually reminded me, I don't know if you listen to NPR that much, but there's Wait, Don't Tell Me has this listener limerick challenge. So they
totally.
Do.
Totally.
Yeah.
It is the science rap equivalent of that for sure.
Yeah. And I always, that's always fun for me. So I liked it. All right. So then onto some of my last questions here. So far, what have been some of your favorite videos? I guess Fossil Rock Anthem might be high up there. I guess give me your absolute favorite video besides that one, and why is your favorite video?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the immortal rap of Henrietta Lacks, which is a recent one. This was the same school who had made the Rosalind Franklin one in Oakland. And obviously there's this big time narrative there. There's ethics, there's history, there's social justice woven throughout. The students did an amazing job of writing the lyrics and thinking about the video. And that was my favorite, not only because the product was, I was really impressed by, but the process was like exactly what I've been building up towards, which is like, I was barely involved. It was that teacher from their school helping their students create everything. And then we had all this amazing bonus stuff, which is that the author of The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, Rebecca Skloot, lives in the Bay Area. She was able to come meet the kids, talk to them about the creation of the book. She was able to put us in touch with the Lacks family. So we were able to kind of okay everything with the Lacks family. And so it was this combination of like empowerment for the kids, a good final product, and brushing up against the like big time major players to make sure that it was really accurate and something that they could be proud of.
Yeah, by doing it, you kind of got involved with the story yourself, I guess, right?
Absolutely. Cool. So that's the one I'm most proud of. And then I'm really proud of a lot of the ones from the Science Rap Academy that are purely student made. Yeah, so some of these Science Rap Academy ones, like Please Don't Kill My Hive.
You need to leave us bees alone. Please don't kill my hive. Please don't kill my hive. We pollinate your crops for you whenever you're away. Spreading pollen, making honey, and we share it. But today we're dying. Please don't kill my hive.
I have colony collapse disorder, and like this seventh grader happened to be some sort of photography genius. And so like the cinematography on this video is way better than any of the quote unquote professional videos that I helped make. Like this kid is just like has been doing real photography since he was in fourth grade. They had drone footage. They just went all out with the lighting. So on a video production, and then that the song is also just awesome. Like I love Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
They did a really good job of the lyrics. And that one's really popular in schools as well. So yeah.
Awesome.
I'll give a shout out that one.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. I'll definitely check it out. It'll be hosted underneath our podcast too. So hopefully we can get it out to people as well. And then I guess my last thing for you is, do you have any advice for somebody trying to start a successful YouTube channel?
Yeah, the YouTube world has been a really, really interesting one for me, and really beneficial in that you can kind of just put out the thing that you're experimenting with and it gets a lot of feedback, or it has the opportunity to go viral, or it has the opportunity to elicit some next project. So I would encourage people to just do it now. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, especially if you're new to some of the skills, it's going to be bad at first. Like your first products are not going to be where you want them to be. And the only way to get better is to do a bunch of them. There's a really, really active and supportive community of science YouTubers that is you can tap into that's really positive, that kind of makes those hard early growth years a little more manageable, or lack of growth years, depending on how it's going.
Sure.
It's definitely not like an easy road, but every now and then someone comes up with an idea that just hits perfectly, like ASAP Science. Their decision was like, okay, we have this idea. We want to make simple whiteboard videos about concepts, and we're going to give ourselves, I forget what their origin story was. It's like, let's do this for 1 year. Mm-hmm. We're going to make one video. I don't know if it was a week or a month. And then like within a couple of their first videos, each one was going viral. And it was just like, now they're literally at the top of the science YouTube game.
Yeah.
It's like, you probably won't wind up like them. I could give all sorts of advice about it, but the truth is you should do it. If it's fun, you'll keep doing it.
Yeah.
And if you keep doing it, you'll get better, and reach out to people for help.
Yeah. I guess you said that ASAP Science was good. Is there anybody else that you were particularly inspired by?
Let's see. Yeah, I made this. I made a music video called "Everybody's Got Questions." Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Yep. Is every dino extinct?
Nope.
Ever stop and think?
Yep.
Ever been bored?
Nope.
Ever wonder what's the difference between a sound and a fjord?
Yep.
You a hater?
Nope.
Holding out.
And it had cameos from pretty much every single science YouTuber I've ever interacted with or met. So you could watch that video and see all my inspirations.
Yeah.
We even got a cameo from Bill Nye, which was pretty amazing.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So he's obviously high on the list of like he made these science parodies at the end of his episodes, yeah. And that was a direct influence for me.
Sure.
And then, yeah, there's so much cool stuff happening in science communication via YouTube right now. Joe Hansen from It's Okay to Be Smart is a really important guy in that community. Derek from Veritasium, I've met a bunch of times, and he's been really supportive. A lot of the people within the PBS Digital Studios world have been awesome. There's another science rapper named Coma Nitty. There's just a lot of folks who have been really supportive.
All right, awesome. Well, yeah, that's pretty much it for our side for questions. Thank you for taking the time to sit down and talk to Adjean and me.
Hey, and I just want to thank you for this whole experience. Has been really, really positive and really, really fun.
Excellent.
Hope you guys are happy with the video.
Oh no, the video is awesome. Like I've sent it around to a bunch of people who are like, "What do you do at your job?" And I'm like, "I work with these things here. Watch this video." So
perfect.
You can learn more about Tom and even download his master's thesis on the impact of content-based songs on learning and engagement at sciencewithtom.com. Be sure to check out his Science with Tom YouTube channel to find the videos we discussed today, and drop him a line through the contact page on his website to see if he can help you communicate your science. If you or someone you know is interested in being featured on the Adjean podcast, let us know by sending a message to blog@adjean.org. We are particularly interested in getting more international guests on the podcast and are happy to do interviews remotely. Don't be shy. Talk to us and help get your research out there through Adgene, a better way to share science.